Hey, everybody. Welcome to the next episode of the Strand Tennis Center podcast, filled with tips, advice, tennis, not tennis, just life advice, too, whatever you need. Like it on YouTube. Share it on the podcast as well. Thank you.
Welcome to the Strand Tennis Center podcast. Santi, good to see you as always.
Hello.
It was fun. That show that was posted last week with Taylor was really good. Fogelman, I actually listened to some of it. I rarely listen to our podcast, but he... is more fascinating than I am, so it was good to hear. If anybody hasn't heard it, it was the LSU women's head coach, very successful guy, won 2 national championships with Texas, has been at LSU for 2 years, and I think he's already turned that program around. They were already under 500. They were under 500 before he was there, then they were over 500, and he's in his second year already. So he's just interesting guy and very good coach. And what'd you think of him, Santi?
I like him because he's, like, from the South, so he's very polite when he talks to us. That's what I got from him when I was watching.
Remember the curse part? Hell, I thought he was going to say a lot worse.
Yeah, that was kind of...
But it's very good. Very respectful. Very nice guy. A humble guy, too, and very successful. Oh, so today, I wanted to go over, kind of curate a lot of things I've been talking about because I've been had the fortunate opportunity to be doing some speaking, and I want to go over what I've been talking about, helping some young people, which has been good. Talking to college students, even if it's on court or even in class, this is going to kind of talk about how you start anything. It could be being an entrepreneur, being a business person, being a tennis person. All of these things can relate to being a successful athlete or being a successful business person. Now, the biggest thing is when you're starting in school and you're in college, I guess the biggest thing I can say is keep your head up. Always be looking around. The problem with school is sometimes you just get wrapped up in studying and you don't look around and meet people. And that's the biggest thing. It's connections in school. It's about meeting people, even on the even tennis-wise. I will talk business and both tennis-wise. Even tennis-wise, you can just practice all day, not have relationships, not meet people, not find that somebody is going to be a great doubles partner or somebody is going to be a super coach for you and help you in the future. Don't close yourself off to it. Business-wise, if you're in an entrepreneurial class and you are sitting next to someone, talk to them. Get to know them. Don't just get an A in the class. Because I always say running a business or being a founder of a business is like being thrown out of a plane naked. It is not the most comfortable thing. And you may find that you are better being number 7 or number 8 employee-wise. And that person may be in class with you. And you may have a collab with them, and it may work. So you should try different things. Don't just listen to the teacher. Talk to your students. Try different ideas. Try different businesses in school. That will help you have a kind of an umbrella of safety inside of failure. So you can fail inside of school and still be okay. Just like Winston, what would Winston Churchill say? I just read his quote. Like, it's just lessons in failure, just degrees of failure and, you know, progressing. You just find success out of failure, and that's all it is. So when you do that, when you decide to yourself, okay, I'm going to either try to be the best tennis player I can be, or I can try to either run this business, you have to define the difference between, we discussed this before, finite and infinite games. Finite game is something that's meant to end. Different rules are set. There's a team on each side. Their job is to win the game and end the game. An infinite game is your job is to continue that game at all times, just trying to keep it going no matter what. So if you can have some self-awareness and realize what game do you think you'll be more successful at, well, obviously, on the long time horizon, if you have an infinite game approach, you're going to be more successful. So if you can say, hey, I want to be a great tennis player, I want tennis to be in my life, no matter what trials or tribulations you get against, if it's just an infinite game for you, you're always going to play. And that's the only reason why we were successful here at all is because I just wanted to play, and I'll go into that a little bit. But having that infinite time horizon, you are going to work harder than everybody else. So the best example of infinite games is education, right? Learning. So if I want to learn, that doesn't stop. I'm always learning. So if I'm obsessed with learning, I'm never going to say, oh, I'm done, because I'm always interested in it. If I love a business or I love running businesses, if I love sports or I love playing tennis, I'm always going to play it whether I have failure or not. I'm not there just to win the four matches and end. Also with relationships, right? You don't seek a significant other, get married, and that's it. You won and you stop it. Like we said, you're always working on it. You're always developing it because you want to, because you love it. You want to play that infinite game. So if you can find what is infinite for you, you're going to beat most of the people. That's the ironic thing. You'll beat most of the people in most of the micro things because you're playing an infinite game. So once you find that infinite game, so we find it, whether it be business, tennis, or anything, I'm going to go over some framework to help you be successful, let's say business format. It's called the value chain, which we discussed before. The value chain is hugely important. That chain has got to be interconnected. And the value chain on the business side goes from the founder to the employee to the customer. And it's got to go in that line, because if the value is not transferred to the employee, it won't be transferred to the customer. Now, first we have to define what value is, and I think it's five different things. It's been talked about before. One is intent and listening. Listening with intent and attention. Number two is elite and specific, high-quality information. Number three is focus on the task. Number four is follow-up, and number five is audit stability. So we'll go over each one. So intent and listening with intent, or intent and paying attention. A lot of people don't listen, and they don't pay attention. It could be on any level. It could be whether you're a coach, whether you're playing, and you're trying to listen to the coach and you don't listen, you don't listen to the specifics. But I'll equate this with business as a perfect example. Danny Meyer, who has a great book called Setting the Table, which will help you with customer service here. He used to run a red restaurant, 11 Madison Park. It was bought by Will Gardera. And he then wrote a book about unreasonable hospitality. And a perfect example of listening would be a waiter. Perfect story, they said, and I think I told you this before, Santi, is they were in the restaurant. The woman was like, oh, I would love to have a New York hot dog. I never had a New York hot dog before. It was our first time in the city. The waiter heard it, ran out, bought a New York hot dog, gave it to the chef, and made, like, an interesting meal with a New York hot dog, and they were blown away that they actually heard that. Those things will always make you successful. Like, this is why this value chain is set, because we're going to discuss what value is, which we are, and we're going to discuss why you can charge a certain price if you interlock these, all of these five concepts. So if you can listen and you can understand what the customer wants or what the student wants or what the coach wants, you're going to be very valuable. When we try to do that here, every consultation, everything that goes on, I'm trying to listen. Everybody's trying to listen, and somebody may say something that they like a lot, and we'll come up with that object or that product. Like, we'll even bring a coffee to someone specifically, even though they're in a training session, because I heard them talk about it. And that's listening with intent. Now, the second part is elite and specific high-quality information. Now, I can give you high-quality information, but it not be specific. A simple example of this is competing with large companies like Amazon. Like Amazon, it's really hard to compete with their customer service algorithm, the way they can do it, the way they get their turnaround time. But what you can do is be more specific. I can know the person a lot more. As a coach, I can know the person a lot more. As a business person, I can know the customer a lot more than Amazon can. That's the problem that Amazon has. They don't really know the customer personally. They know their likes and dislikes, but it's very different knowing the customer. So a simple example would be a great friend of mine is Global Services, right? It's United, and he spends a lot of money on Global Services. That's their top tier of, you know, there's 1K in Global Services. And I was asking them, in that service that they give him, he flies first class and all those things, they don't know his name, and they don't know what kind of drink he likes, and they don't know what kind of food he likes. I'm like, what kind of service is that? Like, you have to have a specific service. You're going to spend that kind of money. You should know the person's name. You should know what they like. You should say, hey, Mr. So-and-so, we have your drink here waiting at your seat. It really is got to go back to, if you're running a small business, you're a coach, you're running a small club, really understanding and listening to that person and going, okay, it's like the local butcher in the 50s or the 60s used to know exactly what kind of cut you meat you want. People don't know that specifically anymore. So if you can give specific high-quality information, you're going to beat or be able to survive and compete with most of those companies that are these large, huge companies. And you're going to be able to compete with, you know, say there's a IMG or a huge coaching facility. If you can create that specific high-quality information, know that student, know them in and out, know what their likes, dislikes are, you're going to be successful. Number three is focus on the task. This is pretty simple, and it takes practice, but people don't do it. Focus on the task means most people are distracted. Most people are on their phone. Most people are not focusing on what they're doing. You can give the information. Like, I can say the exact same thing to one client to another and not be focused on them, and they don't feel special. I could say the exact same thing but be distracted. A perfect example of focus on the task is Chick-fil-A. They created, you know, something. They created drive-thrus. They built
Chick-fil-A.
Them. Yeah. Mock drive-thrus so yeah. They can just practice. Focusing
oh, really?
On a task.
Mock drive.
Mock
so
drive-thrus.
Like training for like train for training purposes.
Yes, for training purposes. So they have a drive-thru and they just practice how efficient
that's
it can be,
crazy.
How quick it can be.
Yeah,
it's incredible. So really, I mean, that's what focus is. Same thing with SoulCycle. If you know SoulCycle, the spinning company, when they started their company, the two women started it. They created a mock front desk in their basement. And they would practice at the desk.
Yeah,
this mock front desk, focusing on how quickly the process can be, and blah blah blah. So that's focusing on the task, right? And now the fourth one, if you can master this, follow up. People don't do it all the time. They just don't simply ask, "How did it go? What's going on?" Reaching out in the middle of the week, and we'll take it back to SoulCycle. SoulCycle was bought by Equinox, which is a large gym, for $90 million. And how that relationship started was through follow up. One of the vice presidents of Equinox went to a SoulCycle class. After the class, I think it was a few days later, whatever, they just said, "How are you?" Blah, blah, blah. They knew about her. "How are you doing?" They didn't ask for anything. They didn't ask her to take another class. They didn't sell her anything. And she was blown away by that type of follow-up and service. And obviously, she was like, "Oh, that should be at our club, at Equinox." But that's how the relationship started. I won't say that they just sold because of that, but without that follow-up, that relationship would have never started, and they ended up selling for $90 million, as we said. So then the fifth one, audit stability. Now, what happens is you do these four things. Things are going well, whether it's on the court, off the court, business, all of it. They're all going well. Then what happens is you start to believe that you can do anything. You get this stability, you get a little cocky, you get a little enthusiastic about you knowing everything. So if you teach a student, they do well, you're like, "Oh, I can do anything. I can just say the same thing and blah, blah, blah." And then you take unnecessary risks. So what happens is when a business becomes stable and you don't audit it, you take unnecessary, uncalculated risks. And then when that happens, it's not stable anymore. A perfect example, as the pickleball nets are being knocked over there. That's all right, though. That's part of it, customer service. So as you're doing this, what happens is when you don't audit the stability, you take unnecessary risks, like we said. So a perfect example of this is Boston Market. Remember Boston Market?
Yeah, it used to be very popular.
Yeah, it was great, right? It was popular,
when I was
right?
a kid. Yeah.
Super popular, right? And they were in competition, like Chick-fil-A was a lot slower. Chick-fil-A didn't take any investor money. They went slow. Boston Market wanted to grow and expand and had market share, and they took on all this debt. Took on too much debt. They couldn't service the debt, and they went out of business. Chick-fil-A is still super successful because they took their time. They took it slow. So you have to audit that stability and go, all right, we're stable, but I can't take a loan for $1 billion and expand and not know that it's going to work or not be 100%. You got to be close to confidence. So in other words, the best thing that you can think about is when you expand – on anything, you do it based on need, not on expectation. When you start to expand on expectation, you are not auditing the stability of what's going on. You are just saying, "Oh, we did this in one place, we're going to do it in 20 other ones." So you get those five focused. You get those five, you're mastering those five. And it works with the employees too, right? Number one, number one is attention, right? What's the attention we give to the employees? One-on-ones, talking to your employees. If you have 20, 25 employees, even 30, you can talk to every employee every 3 weeks. Find out what their needs are. Find out what they need, right? And I said, I've always talked about this. You could have a problem with an employee. You don't even know it because it's something bothering them that's not in the surface yet. What happens if you don't talk for months, that builds and builds and builds, and people make assumptions about what you're thinking and what I'm thinking, and I make an assumption about you. Instead of me talking with you every 3 weeks, it just irons themselves out. You wouldn't even know there's an issue if you don't have the conversation.
I feel like I feel like a lot of us don't like one-on-ones because we feel nervous or we feel like we might get yelled at for something, but it's never, at least for me, it's never been you telling us something wrong or something bad or something, it's not about the one-on-ones that we have aren't about, correcting too many things, or it's more about just like you, at least with me, you have it more like you want to know how I'm doing, how I'm enjoying whatever I'm doing, if I like this class, that class, or I have any problems with anything. I think in a lot of other industries, when you have like a one-on-one with a boss, you kind of feel like, oh, I don't want to have to talk about this and that, and they don't really get into your personal thing. I wouldn't say they don't care about your life, but they don't, I feel like you express more care about outside stuff with us as well, like, oh, are you doing okay, your life's okay, not
okay. Yeah, no, this
out.
Is not a promotion for me. I appreciate your comments. The thing, I guess the most important thing is the one-on-one, the reason why, to me, it doesn't feel like an interrogation because it's standing.
Yeah.
When you have a standing meeting,
yeah,
it's just like it's our one-on-one, right? So we're going to do it every 3 weeks. If I tell you we never have these and go, listen, I need to meet with you in 2 days, you'll be like, holy shit, like something's wrong. But if it's just standing part of procedure, people won't feel nervous about it as much because, oh, this is my one-on-one. We just discuss things and that's it.
Yeah.
It's when, and especially I learned this the hard way when I was starting the business. I would text people on Friday and say, I need to meet on Monday. It would, like, ruin their weekend.
Then,
like,
yeah,
imagine
you
just
get anxiety.
And it could have been nothing. It could have been like, hey, I like those sneakers. You know, it had nothing to do with anything. And I realized never to do that.
Yeah.
Never to pop a meeting on a Friday to say it's on a Monday. So if the meeting is standing and you know the one-on-one and you tell the people that work for you, we're doing these because we want to explore our principles. We want to know what is important to us. We want to transmit that to you.
Right.
Make sure that you're on the same train with us.
Right.
It's just part of the process. We always want to stay in sync. And that's what part of the value chain is. We're staying in sync on the employee side. We're staying in sync with you guys to make sure, hey, is there something that we're not doing right? Is it the process that's not going well? Do you not like the way we're doing this? Or is this not a fit for you and you need to be in this other process, right?
Yeah.
Because you have to have the understanding to know, hey, okay, now some employees, it just doesn't work out. It's not the process. It's just basically their ability, and their ability can't do this job and there's no fit for them anywhere.
Yeah.
Like Ray Dalio's book on principles was good. Basically, values, it's hard to change.
Mm-hmm.
Abilities and skills you can kind of teach. But if somebody's got a certain value and they just don't believe in what you're doing, well, it's just not going to work. You know, they have to have kind of close to the same value line you're having. So part of that employee chain is, so you can go all the way down the line. Focus on attention, attention, focus, follow up. Follow up would be like, Santi, how you doing about those issues or whatever? How's it going? All of those things stay in line. So if you can do all those things, you can connect all those dots. And like we said, if you're selling a product that's worth $50, but the value is that tight, it's really worth $75.
Yep.
So if that delta is that big, all you do if you go, oh, I want to raise rates, this is why I'm saying this framework will be able to help you make more money, but your customer will be happy because you're providing $75 of value, you're only charging $50. So if you want to charge $5 more, it's a no-brainer for them because you've created such value. And I wouldn't have anybody do this unless they do it for 6 or 8 months, that much value, like that much street cred. Every year. Think of Netflix, right?
Right.
227 million subscribers. When they charge me $3 more, I'm like, it's incredible value. They're going to spend $17 billion in content next year. I'm like, $3? That's okay. I'll take it because the value is so high.
Yeah.
Like, where's the number which you would think that Netflix say, okay, this is a little high for me. Like, how much of an increase? How much room do they have? What is it now? $15? $16?
Yeah, I feel like for people, like, it once it hits 20, it might be a little
you
on
think
the
so?
Edge of.
That's the
yeah,
number they have.
There's so well, I feel like there's so many other options
okay.
now. And also, like, I get free Netflix because not because I use it from someone else, because T-Mobile gives me free Netflix.
Okay.
So the phone.
So they have a deal with them. Somehow.
Exactly.
Okay.
So like, I feel like, oh, I have a great value right now. That's why
great.
I love T-Mobile.
Okay.
Because they give you free Netflix and I get free Apple TV, which is crazy. So that's kind of like a big deal. You get both.
How much is your T-Mobile bill? See, I talk
it's
about
only,
advertisement. How
yeah.
much is your T-Mobile bill?
Only $100.
And you get free Apple TV
and
free
Netflix.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Maybe they just want eyes on there, right?
Yeah.
Is it just started with Netflix because they have an advertising end to? Do you get ads with Netflix?
No.
No, you
no
don't.
Ads. It's just okay. The only thing about Netflix is it's not like extreme 4K quality,
okay.
but it's like I can't tell the difference
okay.
anyway. So
that's awesome.
But yeah, but if I had to pay for my own Netflix, anything like near 20 is like a little.
Okay. So that's the room
yeah.
they have. They have about $4 a room to run.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Okay. So you. Okay. So we established the value. You can
right.
charge a little bit more. Now what happens is, inside of this, you're charging value, you have to find that constraint. Remember we always say there's one or two constraints that will unlock it, whether it's your listening, your focus on attention, your follow-up, all those things mm-hmm. will unlock your business. The problem is businesses then don't focus on this enough. They just focus on potential. Oh, we have one of these. We can have 20 of them, and they don't realize the constraint.
Right.
So a simple example is you make handbags, custom. Handmade,
okay.
right? You make handmade handbags. They're great. But what is the constraint with the handbag? If you're making a handbag and your value's there, you're giving people customer service, well, what's the constraint with making a handmade handbag?
Time to make.
Yeah, how many handbags you can make.
Yeah.
Right? So understand the lever you're pulling when you start a business. So if I make custom handbags, okay, I have to lean into the fact that they're custom. So I go, okay, I'm only, say you can make 100, but now, say you're going to only be able to make 70.
Okay.
You increase the price.
Right.
Because of the value of the handbag. So if you have that constraint, realize, okay, I may not have a $1 billion business. It may be a few million because I go, all right, I have a $70 handbag. I'm going to charge $10,000 a handbag because I've created
crap.
This value.
Yeah.
And I realize it's a custom-made handbag.
Yeah,
whatever,
yeah,
we're just
of
doing
course.
Round numbers. So some people will have all these value change connected, but they don't get sometimes the constraint that's about, like, our biggest constraint is how much space we have, right?
Yeah.
So our biggest constraint is that. So then what we do is we consult on other clubs. We run a media business, right? We do things that we can grow outside of that constraint.
Yeah.
So you got to figure out ways to do that because you can't just go, we have potential, we'll do 20 of these. Building's too expensive, all of those things. You got to find what it is. And it's a certain order to get rid of those constraints. So, and that's when we go into the next cycle, which is the cycle of choices. And what happens is people get that constraint, and they're pissed off, and they can't figure it out. So what do? They quit. So in other words, you start a business, you're all juiced up, right? You start a business first year, you're all pumped up, you're going to conquer the world. And I've heard people say that, we're going to beat this person, beat that person. Then you go, oh, shit, this is really harder than I thought. I can't do this. I can't do that. Then you get really depressed. And what happens is you just, oh, my God, maybe I'll sell widgets instead. Maybe I'll sell custom-made hats. So you go to the next thing, and you go through that cycle. And it's the same crap. What you got to do is push through and push through and push through till you get to that next level. That's why a business, between year one and year three, you're going to learn a lot, but you're going to hit this cycle. And you have to push through to
mm-hmm.
3 and 5. It's like a kid, right? So if you can get to 3 and 5, it can start to crawl on its own. Then if you get to 5 to 10, it does a little bit more on its own. Then when you get into an adolescent and into 20 years, then all you kind of do is give it guidance.
Yeah.
Like a kid that's 20 years old, right? They go to work, they do their stuff, but you give it guidance when it needs to. So you've got to push through that or you'll constantly be changing and changing and changing. They always say it's not the game plan, it's the discipline. Like, your game plan can be pretty easy. Like, the two easiest things to figure out, like we always said, are fitness and finance, right? They're
mm-hmm.
they're huge industries. Fitness, what do you do? Eat right and work out every day. You'll be fit. But people hire trainers. They do this. They take pills. Or finance. What do? Santi, you save 20% of your money. You invest it in a S&P 500 index fund with little to no fees. You wait 10 years and you get 10% on your money. You keep doing that and you'll be rich in 20 years. But people are like, no, I want a hot stock. Give
me
the hot stock.
They want to be skinny fast. Yeah. They want to be rich quick.
So that's just like a business. It's just like with tennis. The game plan's there. The discipline is hard. Tennis, practice 3-4 days a week, 3-4 hours at a clip. Stay fit, and you're probably going to be pretty good. If you do something long enough, you're going to be pretty good at it. It's like a 100-year thing. If I worked on one problem for 100 years, I think I'd be pretty good at it.
Should have solved it by
right?
then.
So
yeah.
If I worked on being a tennis player for 100 years, I'd probably be pretty good at it. Yeah. You just got to stick with it. Just do more. So that's kind of my overall curated list of what we've kind of discussed, and it's good to help on all levels, I think. Business-wise, tennis-wise, I hope it helps. Anything you have to add, Santi?
Anything
you're interested in discussing?
Not
How are you otherwise?
I'm doing well.
You're doing well?
Yeah.
You're doing a really good job, buddy,
by the way. Thank you.
This is a little
I try.
Public one-on-one. You're doing a good job. Like, you're really taken to, you know, we had a couple different initiatives with Santi. He's doing a great job. I think he's actually liking it, too.
I like it.
Yeah,
it's
like
fine.
A pause.
No,
pause. I like it. I better tell
him. And, like, the last podcast with Taylor, it was like a big puzzle.
Yeah.
Because we've never done... We've done, you know, podcasts with other people in it, but not, like, virtually. So it's like I had to figure out how to piece it all together like a puzzle. It's kind of fun because I've never done – I'm not, like, you know, I'm not, like, a editor of the world, you know. I don't work for Facebook. I don't work for YouTube or anything. I can't make, like, a movie. But you learn a lot of things just by searching online, you know, how to do this, how to do that.
That's the beautiful part about, like we just said, your values are caring about the club. Your abilities and talents, you can figure anything out. You really can figure a lot of stuff out.
Try.
Nice job.
Try my best.
Everybody, take action, right? That's the answer. Don't think. I see all people thinking and not doing anything. The answer's in the actions. Thanks, everybody.
Hey, everybody. Hope you like the podcast. Please share it with your friends, anybody that you know, anybody that's into tennis, anybody that's into bettering themselves. Share it.